The Guardians, Path of Ascension, by Bruce R.F. Chapter 7, The Passage of Time. A warm summer sea breeze soothes their skin from the smoldering sun overhead. With no clouds to shield them, they are at the mercy of the elements. But that's just fine for Leon. He can do this all day, dancing with forceful exchanges between him and his student Almir. The sand that whips with each soaring kick sticks to their sweaty bodies, uncomfortably so. But the wind that blows certainly makes up for the unpleasantness of the beach.
Jeez, I can't believe it's been a year already, Almir comments, while ducking a roundhouse kick from Leon.
Yep, a whole year of training, and yet all you seem to know how to do is dodge. Get inside my guard for once, land a hit, throw a punch. Come on, be different, make this a challenge, Leon scolds boldly, egging Almir on and setting him up for a new technique.
But you taught me to be a defensive fighter, O Wise One,
Almir smarts off, then takes a step back, rooting his feet into the soft sand.
Ugh,
he exclaims, while making a sour face at the grains seeping into his water shoes.
Remind me why you insist on training at the beach again,
he complains, unaware both of his friend's intent and his feet, which have also sunken into the softness. It's growing on me, Leon shrugs. I've been practicing out here at night, he answers, then shifts his eyes left and right, checking the passers-by, before doing a skipping hop backward. In the moment as he lands, he thrusts his hands downward. Suddenly, before Almir can respond, the sand beneath him sinks, opening into a hole, which swallows him up to his knees before closing.
Oh shit!
Almir exclaims, just as Leon thrusts his hands forward, and a billow of sand forms a fist that strikes him in the face. Offering a hand up to his downed and coughing student, Leon reaches out to help him to his feet. What did you think of that move? He asks him.
What? You did that?
Almir looks to him, dumbfounded. Leon shakes his head with a disappointed sigh.
You still haven't grasped the use of ether.
His student shrugs defensively.
Sure, I know a little bit, but...
See, you don't practice enough.
Whoa!
Leon topples forward, feeling his leg give way. He turns as he falls, finding himself seemingly knee-deep in sand. Turning about, he reaches back to support himself, only to land shoulder-deep.
Pull me up!
Leon panics, and Almir scrambles to drag him to solid ground.
Are you all right, Lee?
He asks, placing his friend on the boardwalk.
It felt like I was made of sand a second ago,
he states, trying to grasp the moment. Leon sits up, creeping to the end of the wooden platform, reaching ever so slowly over the edge. As he places his hand on the sandy ground, he presses in, only to be astonished as it seems to be devoured by the earth. Quickly he pulls back, looking over himself, before trying again with only a finger, which disappears, much like his hand did a moment ago.
That's cool,
Almir lets out.
So that's what you've been practicing?
He asks. Leon rests there, flabbergasted by the experience.
I guess so.
Beep, sounds the first of her three watches, just as Simon steps out onto the patio of their apartment to catch her staring off into the evening sky. There's a quaint little smile on her face as she gazes northwest, toward the fading sun.
Guess what?
Simon whispers. There's only one possibility, the flow of this moment. And she smiles, while teasing at the strings of time that she plucks, delicately so, like the chords of her hummingbird guitar, which rests in her lap.
What?
She replies playfully to his query, for it's so unlike him to be so subtle.
My suit is done. I want to show it to you,
he says, just as her scene ripples, growing unsteady as the event collapses. The light twists, reverting back to the way it was a few moments ago.
Beep.
Jazra!
She hears him shouting for her.
That's more like it.
She smirks with a closing of her eyes, before turning to see an overly excited Simon coming out of the door behind her.
Let me guess. Your new toy is ready,
she presents. Simon stops in his tracks, dropping his gaping grin.
Well, yeah, but...
He then realizes.
Stop that!
He exclaims, and she laughs.
I can't help it. I've been watching this very moment play out 10 different ways for the last few minutes,
she tells him.
Wait, so are we here now? Or is it then?
He asks with a puzzled look.
Don't worry about it. We're in now. But I could always go back to then if you like,
she teases. Though she could, if only for a few seconds.
Anyway, this is what I wanted to show you.
He pulls her inside. Jazra shrugs.
What is it?
She asks, as if she didn't already know.
I'm gonna put on the suit, and it's gonna be awesome,
he says, picking up the top half. She smirks, having seen this before.
Question. It may be silly, but aren't those gonna hurt?
She asks knowingly, while pointing at the copper barbs lining the inside. Simon's smirk drops as he ponders.
Crap. They should auto-align, so hopefully it won't be that bad,
he says, reassuringly, though mainly to himself. Slipping his arms into the sleeve, he feels the little devices brushing against the skin. They line more than just the spine of the suit, connecting the meridians in the arms and chest as well. The pants, gloves, and headgear are also outfitted with similar connectors. Once suited up, he takes a deep breath and switches it on.
Here goes nothing.
He barely finishes his sentence before the suit powers up. Simon grits his teeth as the meridian lines thread into him, as if he were wearing a full-body corset. The nanites inject next, flowing out from the meridian lines and into his system. At first, he jitters as they course through him.
Simon!
Jazra says fearfully, as he turns gray. She didn't see this part in her vision.
Simon!
She grabs his shoulder as he collapses, gasping for air. He holds up a hand.
I'm okay. I'm okay!
He shouts.
That's normal. It's supposed to happen,
he tells her.
What? You're fucking gray! That's supposed to happen?
She asks.
That's just them getting into the red blood cells,
he says, catching his breath.
Yeah, binding to the cells kind of freaks the body out. But I'm good now. It looks like it's all working.
He sits up in his chair, checking the computer interface and comparing it to the display and the new monocle visor over his right eye. Simon's breath then becomes staggered for a second.
Oh man.
He leans to his side, feeling nauseous, before coughing up some fluid into his hand.
Ugh, that's not good.
He feels a gritty sensation with a metallic taste in his mouth.
What?
She asks.
My immune system is attacking this version of the nanites. I didn't expect that,
he says, typing something into the computer. The body diagram on the display shows flashes of red, where the microscopic bots are having trouble. Attaching an intravenous line to his wrist, he then recalls them.
Looks like I'll have to work on that. But the suit feels great.
He laughs as his color returns to normal, though he can still taste the metal in his mouth. Once his system is clear, he gets up.
Do you want to go for a little sparring?
He asks her, while playfully punching the air like a child. Outside, they take their positions, facing each other. Simon roots himself in a cat stance, with a 70-30 weight distribution. Jazra, on the other hand, stands casually, letting the wind blow around her as her flowing reddish-brown hair trails to one side in the breeze.
No stance? Simon asks.
This is my stance,
she comments, and then rests her right arm across her midsection to grasp her wrist with her left hand. The second Simon steps to pounce, there's a subtle beep of her watch. She appears to phase, blurring in his sight, as if for a brief second there were two of her. He throws a sidekick off his right leg, and then, without appearing to move, Jazra is to the outside of his attack. Taking him at the hip, she roots her stance inside his guard, then trips him as she twists.
Beep.
Where did you learn that?
He questions her technique.
Sigh.
She replies. Simon groans.
I knew that wasn't yours,
he says, while drawing energy from his surroundings. There's a warming sensation where the meridian lines enter his body as the ether interacts with his devices. He then kips up, throwing a sweep that catches her left heel. Out of her tumble, she swings an arm back and brings herself into a cartwheel to avoid the ground.
Beep, beep, beep,
she sets all three, seeing the stream of possibilities in her mind's eye. Out of his attack, she sees him using the energy to launch himself, then strafe left, throwing two punches before pulling energy into his hand for a third strike. His suit makes him faster than her and adds a bonus to his strength. Still, there's nothing faster than knowing, and with that to her advantage, she looks a few plays ahead. In the first option, she can dodge the initial attack, but lacks the speed to counter his follow-up strikes. In the second option, she can block, deflecting his forward momentum to knock him off center. If she does that, he won't be thinking about an energy strike. He'll be more worried about staying balanced. While in option three, she can strafe to the right, where his guard is slightly open, and jump into a round kick to his ribs, but his suit is likely to absorb the attack. The best action is to counter by throwing him on his ass, but she knows her boyfriend doesn't like to lose, and losing this early would likely bruise his pride, especially given his fancy new tech. She takes the hit, initially rolling with the jab to the cheek, and as she comes out, she projects a bubble that sends Simon through a mental loop, forcing him to move slightly forward, then backward through time. He becomes nauseous, not able to cope with the disorientation of time travel. Before he realizes it, she's behind him, kicking him swiftly, playfully, in the butt. Simon powers up, circulating more energy through his core. Her strikes, though annoying, only serve to feed him more power. It's weird to absorb energy in this fashion, he notices, because he's expecting a different result from being hit. It takes him a few tactical exchanges before he gets the feel of his equipment.
How many moves can you see ahead?
Simon asks her, while trading blows and dodging techniques.
About 10,
she smirks, teasing at the possibility she sees.
Then who's gonna win?
He asks.
Don't worry, I'll let you,
she winks. Seldon trained every day, practicing in symbiotic delight. The benefits of the Malnar amplified his energy, making things possible that he once could only dream. Even unshrouded, he saw improvements. His control of the ether increased considerably in only a few short months, and by the end of that first year, Seldon found himself a new person. With the day turning to dusk and the evening air beginning to cool, Selden withdraws from his fun in the sun to seek cover for the night ahead. As he enters the mouth of the cave, the Malnar retracts its extrusions, unlatching from his back and spider crawling to a perch on his shoulder just as he comes upon the home that he had made for himself. There, he scoops up the little flower and places it in a quiet corner where he had fashioned a soil plot, and as he sets it there, it roots down into the dirt, then closes its bud for the night. Selden then turns, fires a flawless stream of bluish-white energy to a large crystal in the middle of the room to shed light on the situation. The action comes naturally, as if he had performed it 100 times or more. Shedding his clothes, he stands nude, bathing in the light, as it sparkles, dancing amongst the crystals. Although his companion has hunkered down for the night, he's not tired one bit. In fact, he's never felt more alive. The power that circulates in his aura plays with the structures that encircle him, teasing at the delicate pull that he feels all around. Outstretching his arms, he pushes the ether from his core, extending his aura to the edges of the walls. As the pull between him and the cave grows stronger, he begins to levitate, suspended by the energy as it courses all around. Closing his eyes, Selden then focuses his consciousness to the point in his mind's eye, until he feels a swell of pressure building there. From that point, he moves the pulsating presence down into his center, just below his navel. It is there that he can feel the polar fluctuations of the earth pushing back against him. Steadily, he oscillates the energy in his core, offsetting the polarity so that it causes him to roll, as if he were cartwheeling in midair. This meditative dance is what he'll do tonight, what he did last night, and what he'll do tomorrow onward.
Grrr!
He hears loudly from behind. The sound breaks his concentration, though not by much. He spins himself about, leaping with a push of energy, like two magnets opposing one another. He then lands softly, just past the edge of the pool. The bellowing roar echoes throughout the cave, growing louder and louder as he approaches. He can feel the presence of the beast, as well as two weaker entities behind it. Coming from around the cave, he spots the bear in its entirety, as it makes a ruckus, sniffing about the place, searching for the smell that is likely him. "Huh, where were you when I was starving?" he comments openly. Hearing him, the animal responds with its own sounds. Through the roar, Selden can hear something else underneath. "You weren't hibernating, it was summer. No matter, this is my dwelling. You can't stay here. There's a den a few miles south. Just follow the river upstream," he says, and then begins to turn away. It roars at him again, and he snaps back. "Don't take that tone with me," he scowls. The bear then stands, offering a ferocious growl as the two cubs tuck behind. Selden takes a step forward, showing no sign of fear, as he charges his body with the ether. The loose stones near him begin to rise, caught in the wake of his aura, which flares with faintly visible shimmers of energy that spark like static, arcing around him. Backing away, the beast lowers itself to him, returning only a faint stare to make eye contact. "I'm the guardian of life," Selden answers. "You may call me Sai." With a gesture, the bear bobs its head, only slightly, as if to nod, before turning away. "It's late," Selden says. "I'll be kind enough to bring food and allow you to stay for the night. Come morning, you best be on your way," he offers, before returning to his den. Just outside the cave, from a vantage within the trees, a darkly dressed figure watches in curious observation.
"Good. You are becoming as confident as you are merciful, young life guardian,"